This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
We're talking about Cam and whether or not his future is in Carolina based on what his owner, David Tepper, said, and also obviously with Matt Rhule, Joe Brady, the new brain trust running the Carolina Panther franchise. Let me bring in the crew, and then we got our favorite caller, 83-year-old Barbara from Louisiana, wants to weigh in. But let me start with Danny G. Do you think Cam Newton will be the starting quarterback for the Carolina Panthers week one of this upcoming season?
Well, let's just say if the network's owners made a comment like that about you, I would tell the rest of the staff.
We're going to have a new leader.
Yeah, Outkick might be moving to a different network. Yeah, I like Cam to the Chargers. It sounds good to me. I feel like L.A. would come out to watch him. 1 year, $19 million left. That's a number you could live with. I would still draft Justin Herbert and follow the Chiefs' lead with how they brought Mahomes along at their own pace.
Yeah, 1 year, $19 million is not that bad. Now, Cam would probably want an extension if he were traded to somebody. So maybe you use Cam as a 2 or 3 year bridge, or maybe you don't. Maybe you just say to Cam, you know what, we'll see how it goes, and you would have the opportunity to franchise him at the end of the year, because $19 million is not a bad number for a quarterback to be on the hook for. What about you, Dub? Do you think Cam, you're an Auburn guy, do you think that Cam is effectively done in Carolina when you hear a quote like that from David Tepper?
Yeah, it's not looking too good for Cam Newton right now if he wants to stay in Carolina, which he says he does. So I believe he will get traded, and I love the Chargers for Cam because, like you mentioned in the opening segment, he wants to be an icon. And where do people move when they want to become icons? They go to Los Angeles. He's going to have the bright lights. You see how he dresses. Anyone who dresses like that has to just automatically love L.A. So I like L.A. for Cam, and I agree with Danny G. I think they should still use their first-round draft pick in L.A. to draft a quarterback, just like the Chiefs did with Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes. And as for the Panthers, David Tepper's been very, very aggressive since he took over the Carolina Panthers, giving Matt Rhule that huge contract, going out to get Joe Brady. So I believe they're going to be very aggressive in the draft as well. I don't think they're going to be sitting around with their number 7 pick and just waiting to see who drops and falls to them. I think they're going to be a very live team when it comes to drafting, trading up and getting a higher draft pick, maybe that 2 or number 3 pick to try and get Tua or someone else, maybe Justin Herbert. So that is how I see this move going down. Cam Newton is probably out, and then I think Carolina in turn is going to be very aggressive before the draft.
Let me say this too. I would not be stunned if before all is said and done, the Carolina Panthers bringing in Joe Brady, if he and Matt Rhule are sitting around and they are debating what to do at quarterback, if they love Joe Burrow, there is literally no price you can pay that's too much if the quarterback ends up being a stud. In other words, you know, people say, oh my God, I can't believe what X team gave up to go get the number one pick. There's nothing you could give up. If you find out, if you're right about Joe Burrow, and he is going to be your quarterback for the next 15 or 16 years, and he's going to win you a couple of Super Bowls, there is no price that you can give up that would be too much. So I wonder on some level, what is Joe Brady saying to Matt Rhule about Joe Burrow? If you believe in Joe Brady and you are sitting around paying him millions of dollars and Matt Rhule says, you know what, you're right, Joe, we got to go get the other Joe Burrow, why not with David Tepper sit down with him and figure out everything that you have to do in order to go get him? There's no price you could pay that would be too much, especially when you're a young team that's probably in the rebuilding mode. Even, and this may be crazy, and some of you are going to think, my God, what in the world are you contemplating here, Clay? Even if it meant you had to give up Christian McCaffrey. Yes, I'm saying it. If you think you are a team that is in a rebuilding mode and Christian McCaffrey, as good as he is a running back, and we've seen what happens with running backs, they hit walls, they expect big contracts. If you went to the Bengals and said, hey, Christian McCaffrey and our first round pick for your number one pick, is that not a good deal for the Bengals, but also maybe for the Carolina Panthers? It's something that I would consider if you are convinced that Joe Burrow is the guy and he is going to be a stud for years and years in the NFL. Christian McCaffrey and your first round pick for the Bengals number one. Is that a pick the Bengals have to take? It's at least worth thinking about. Eddie, is that a crazy trade offer for the Panthers? If you are convinced, if you're David Tepper, and you know down the line you're going to have to pay $15, $16 million a year minimum to Christian McCaffrey, and you think you are a part of a rebuilding franchise, Christian McCaffrey and your first-round pick for the number one overall pick to get Joe Burrow, is that not a decent deal that both sides would have to think about if the Panthers are truly convinced that Joe Burrow is a franchise quarterback who's going to be their guy for a decade plus?
I would absolutely do it. I mean, look, we talk about the Herschel Walker trades, the Ricky Williams trades. You know, those guys were running backs. This is a quarterback league, and we're talking about, as you said, a franchise quarterback, the most important position in all of football. You have that set for the next decade or so. That's
huge. And
you
have the perfect coaching staff.
It's huge. I would absolutely do it. I would absolutely do it.
What about you, Dub? Is that a trade you'd make?
I don't think it's enough for the Bengals, to be quite honest.
And that's crazy, too, if you say that. I mean, like, Christian McCaffrey, who's arguably the best skill position playmaker right now in the NFL, and that would be just a sign of how much a lack of value there is for the running back. You just don't think it's enough value.
I think they'd have to throw in probably another second-round pick and then quite possibly another first-round pick for next season if they're going to get the Bengals to really consider giving up that number one pick. But
where's the Panthers pick right now?
They're number seven right
now. Yeah. So the number seven and Christian McCaffrey, you don't think is enough for the number one pick?
It wouldn't be enough for me if I'm in love with Joe Burrow, which I'm sure the Cincinnati Bengals are.
Sorry. If the Bengals are truly in love with Joe Burrow, then there's nothing that anybody should offer to them that they're willing to give up that pick for. Let me say that. Right. But it's the Bengals, right? So I don't necessarily trust their evaluation. And I think Christian McCaffrey and the number seven overall pick is, if you're not in love with Joe Burrow, a pretty incredible haul. Theoretically, that would still allow you to take, let's say the Bengals like Justin Herbert. Let's say they've sat around and they've done all their due diligence and they look at Justin Herbert and say, hey, we love this guy. Or maybe they like Jordan Love. Or maybe they like Jake Fromm and they don't think there's a lot of difference between Jake Fromm and Joe Burrow in the end. They could trade back and still get a first-round quarterback, add Christian McCaffrey. I don't know. I mean, that's something I think you have to consider.
Well, and there's still the layer because, you know, Joe Burrow's had comments in recent weeks where he kind of beats around the bush of saying, you know, Cincinnati's not my
first choice. He doesn't seem like he really
choice.
Wants to go to the Bengals.
Right. So if he ends up pulling an Eli Manning here, that could be something where teams around the league, and I think Carolina would be the most aggressive in doing so. If he comes out and says, look, I'm not playing in Cincinnati. I want to be the number one pick, but Cincinnati's not the destination for me. Then watch out for Carolina because they have Joe Brady. And like I said, David Tepper seems like a very, very aggressive guy, and he means business. So I think that would be a team that would go out and do anything they could to go get him.
What do you think about my proposed trade there, Danny G? Christian McCaffrey and the number seven pick for the Bengals' number one pick so the Panthers could go get Joe Burrow. And by the way, maybe they could add another pick or two later in the draft if they just moved Cam Newton on somewhere else, right? Like maybe somebody else would give a little bit. Maybe there's enough demand for Cam Newton from the Bears, let's say, to get a second or a third round pick. So you've cleared the deck there as well before you bring in your quarterback of the future.
Well, a mix in McCaffrey backfield would be pretty sick, but I guess I would want to know who the Bengals could bring in at QB. Like, is there anyone in free agency at the quarterback position, do you think, that would make sense for them?
I mean, look, I think they could kick the tires on Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, if you are the Bengals and you suddenly had Teddy Bridgewater, Joe Mixon, you know, we'll see what happens with AJ Green and Christian McCaffrey. That seems to me to be a pretty stocked backfield, right? And then at wide receiver, if AJ Green comes back healthy, that seems like it could change things pretty quickly for them. And my assumption, we talked about this yesterday, is that Drew Brees is going to come back. And so you would be likely to go, if Drew Brees comes back, make the decision Taysom Hill is going to be our quarterback of the future in New Orleans. And then that would open up the quarterback position. Now, it appears also that they're willing, the news is out there, to do whatever it takes to move on from Andy Dalton. So maybe there's also an additional pick that the Bengals could get that way. But you could get Teddy Bridgewater and probably with the number 7 overall pick, either go get another talented playmaker there or trade back and get your quarterback of the future later in the first round.
Who would that be? That would be like Jordan Love, maybe?
Jordan Love, and although he seems to be moving up on the draft boards, but Jake Fromm, a guy who would have been higher rated than Joe Burrow coming into this season out of the SEC, or maybe you like Jacob Eason, you know, big, strong quarterback out of Washington who's going to be a late first round, early second round style guy. You could still draft a quarterback pretty high. You just wouldn't be getting Joe Burrow. And who knows? I mean, by the way, with that 7 pick, you could try and pick, you know, pair it with something else and maybe move back up and still get Tua for the Bengals. You know, maybe you like Tua more than you do Burrow. I don't know. It's at least something to think about. And again, I think Carolina is the linchpin here, and those quotes from David Tepper make me think it could make sense. I think Barbara in Louisiana, she's 83 years old. She's one of our favorite calls. She wants to weigh in on the NFL free agent market. Barbara, what do you think? What do you think about my trade idea with Cam Newton? Do you think he's got a lot of years left with Carolina?
Okay, Clay, I didn't have any comment on Cam Newton, but something's been on my mind about Brady, and I want to discuss it. So I'll just hold on.
No, you go ahead. Tell me what about Brady's been on your mind.
Okay. Anyway, when I heard a broadcast that Tom Brady was moving somewhere in Connecticut, I said to myself, that's near New York. And I said, it sure would be wonderful if he could consider playing for the New York Giants. So when Eli announced his retirement, I started thinking about the glory days that Tom could bring back to New York. Clay, he definitely would win that East Division. And he could possibly win the NFC Championship and go to the Super Bowl. Now, when the speculation came about the possibility of him going to the Titans, the Raiders, and the Chargers, I said, well, one thing, the Titans have a good quarterback. And as for the concerning the Raiders and the Chargers, why would he consider playing in a division where Patrick Mahomes would be a thorn in his side?
Yep.
So I said, he may as well stay with the Patriots. So now, just as Tom sat watching Drew Bledsoe, Daniel could learn from him, and Tom would do something that has never been done before. When Joe Willie was successful with the Jets in the AFC and retired with the NFC Rams, nothing came of that.
Yep.
Joe Montana was successful with San Francisco in the NFC. He retired with the AFC. Nothing. So it's possible for Tom to do what no quarterback has ever done, win a championship in both leagues, okay? So I just regret I didn't announce my Super Bowl picks early in the season, Clay, because I would be feeling just like you feel, okay?
Barbara, so did you have any kids?
No, sir. I don't have any kids. I'm 83. I know, cause that's why if I had a grandchild, his show would be like you and you, because I love your diction. I love your logic. I just love everything.
Well,
about
I love
you.
The reason why I was asking is I do think this is an interesting question. Why did they move? And I know, you know, the line is if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. But that is an intriguing part of this discussion. I've got 3 boys, right? My kids are 12, 9, and 5. And if we decided to suddenly move out of my house now, where we live now, why would we move? It would probably be because my wife eventually decided, you know what, we need to move somewhere new, right? I don't know if I would ever move again. We're good where we are. But if I moved, it would be a sign that we are deciding to change something in our life. And I do think you're right. Why would, if you're in New England and you've been there for years and years, why do you decide to move? I do think that's a really intriguing part of the dynamics in the Brady household.
Exactly. And like you say, California is no place to be raising children, not with those laws they have on the book. And I'm thinking it might come as a shock or a surprise. I would wouldn't be surprised, but I hope and pray he does go to the New York Giants and bring that city out again and be the first one in history to win a championship in both leagues. Going from the AFC to the NFC, that's a feather in anyone's cap.
Now, that is impressive, but you're in Louisiana where almost everybody is a Saints fan. Who is your team? Are you a Giants fan?
Not me. I have never been a Saints fan.
Yeah.
I have never been a Saints fan because I lived in California for when I was in my 30s.
Yeah.
I was an Oakland Raider fan. And then I lived in Denver. I was a Denver fan. Now I'm a Patrick Mahomes fan.
I don't blame you. That's a good person to be a fan of.
Yes, but then I was, before Patrick came on the scene, I was a Seattle Seahawks fan. But other than that, that's where I am. But like you say, I'm not a New Orleans fan. I live right down here. I don't live in New Orleans. I live in a little community called Tarrytown. Oh, by the way, Clay, I'm a poetry writer. I do acrostic poetry. May I send you some of my poetry? Because it's very spiritual. It's very inspiring. And your wife would hang that up in your house, and your house would be blessed.
Well, I need it. I need to be blessed as much as I can. Barbara, so hang on, Barbara, here. Danny G, get Barbara's phone number, but more importantly, give her the direct line. Thank you, Barbara.
Okay.
Have a good.
God bless you, Clay.
Thank you for the call. We need to make sure that Barbara doesn't ever have to wait. All right? So
yeah, she's great.
She is fantastic. Danny G, I want you to make sure she has the direct line. So anytime she wants to call in, we can get her on without her having to wait in line and or deal with the fact that our phones in Nashville may or may not be working. So we're going to put – I don't know that we've ever done this before. We're going to advance Barbara into Hall of Fame call status where she gets a direct line where she can reach us at any point in time, anytime during the show. So this is like if we had an OutKick caller Hall of Fame. Is that a unanimous accord that we should put Barbara in? Anybody object?
Yeah.
Anybody? Eddie, you in agreement as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Danny, is she the one who sent us the king cake back in the day?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, the king cake is pretty outstanding.
Yeah, it was. It was really good.
I had a couple of king cakes. They had them in the press box for the LSU game against Clemson down for the national championship in New Orleans. And our buddy Dan Wetzel. I was like, what are you eating there? I said, like a king cake. And he was like, is that any good? And I was like, man, you got it. And he ended up having three or four of them, I think. It's impossible to say no to those things. All right, so when we come back, we have got a great – let's go ahead and put the – I'll open up the phone lines here. OutKick debate. Did you guys see this viral video of the guy? It's all over social media. The guy who is a big man, I think like 6'7" or whatever – and a woman reclined her seat directly into him, and so he was just like hitting the back of her seat over and over and over again. Did everybody
yeah.
see that video?
He had the last seat in the plane, so he couldn't recline his chair, but she was reclining hers
yeah.
into his legs.
There are very few things I feel more strongly about. Now, I'm not defending that guy for being able to hit the back of the chair over and over again. I wouldn't do it, but airplane seats should not recline, period. They shouldn't recline, and I think that one of the true ways to tell whether somebody is an awful human being or not is whether they recline their seat. I really do believe this. I think it says a lot about you. I never recline my seat.
Neither
I'm
do
six
I.
6 foot, 180 pounds. I am a decent sized guy, bigger than most people. And I can't even imagine if you're larger than me. But, you know, let's say I have a laptop on the plane or whatever. If someone reclines their seat and you are sitting in coach and you are a decent sized human like I am, it's impossible for you to sit in your seat, and then you feel like, well, I now am obligated to recline my seat, and it's just a never-ending process. It's like the person in the football stadium who stands up, and there's no major event going on, and then you look, and there's like 20 people who have to stand up behind that guy because they have to be able to see. And I understand standing up occasionally for big plays, but if you're the person who stands up in a game for the entirety of the game, I think you're kind of being a jerk because you're impacting everybody else around you. I think reclining the seat guy is the worst human being on the planet.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Carolina's moving on from Cam is my opinion. We played the audio for you of their owner, David Tepper, if the Panthers offered Christian McCaffrey and their number 7 pick to the Bengals. So the Panthers could draft Joe Burrow number 1 should the Bengals take it almost immediately, first of all. My favorites are the people who are just adamantly opposed in the get-go. But this is interesting. 53% of our voters so far say yes with the first 1,000 votes in. You can go vote and get your comments in as well at Clay Travis on Twitter. Chris Mannix with us now. You can follow him on Twitter at SI Chris Mannix. And we begin with a massively important question. Chris, how tall are you?
I'm 6'3".
Okay, so you're a big guy. What is your opinion on airplane seats that recline?
I don't recline.
Yep.
And I know what you're talking about, the video. And,
yes.
And my general policy is if somebody reclines like that, especially if they go all the way back,
yep,
they are probably going to spend some of the flight with my knee in there.
Directly in the small of their back. Yes.
Directly in the small of their back, yes. That's generally what's going to happen.
So, and my argument is for guys that are a decent height, right? Like my wife is 5'2 or 5'3 or whatever the heck she is. Like she's got a lot of space on a coach flight seat. So I don't think she genuinely thinks about it very much if she reclines her seat. I'm 6 foot. I think if you're a decent sized guy, the minute somebody reclines, it's like you're in prison. Like you can't move on a typical coach flight.
Well, you also kind of, you know, poke your head up, and if I see a man or a woman that's like, you know, 5'10 or under, you look at them like, do you really need to do this? Like, if there's a guy in front of me that, if there's like an NBA player in front of me, I can accept some reclining. Like, I understand that you're already, you know, jammed into that seat, but if you're a smallish type of person, you're still reclining. I can't handle that. I just can't. I will periodically kind of stick my, I won't bang the seat like the guy did,
yes,
but I will stick my knee up and just press it there really hard so that
right
they
in their
know
back.
I'm there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt. And you work, I'm sure, try to work sometimes on planes as well. You can't use a laptop if somebody reclines directly in front of you. Like, you can't use your tray.
And this is like, it's you know, first world stuff, but it's like, this is literally why I will make sure I'm a Delta flyer, but I make sure I fly Delta everywhere no matter what, because the odds of getting the upgrade are just too high versus the alternative. It's literally the difference between working for 4 or 5 hours and just sitting there being miserable 4 or 5 hours.
This turns into, and this is kind of, you'll probably know this, but I bet a lot of people out there don't know this, for like television contracts, this turns into a negotiable part of your television contract. Like whether or not you get first class if you're traveling for TV is something that your agent will have to go back and forth sometimes with negotiating with the company, because if you're trying to work, or you know, like the difference between being able to just have a normal flight and getting absolutely crushed, especially if you're traveling cross country for like an hour and a half flight or something like that, I don't think it's as bad. But when you're talking about 4 or 5 hours, or God forbid, like you've been traveling recently, like going overseas, I mean, it's a difference between being able to basically be functional when you get off and not.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and you're right with, you know, I do some TV stuff for DAZN and boxing and NBC for basketball and boxing. But every time those negotiations come up, it's a non-starter to do any kind of deal unless you get, you know, first class for those types of trips. I mean, I go to L.A. a lot. And, you know, you kind of, you know, working for SI, you don't do that. But you sit there, like I wake up in the morning and I'm instantly checking the upgrade list to see what's happening. Like it's like just it's a process of watching to see if you're jumping up that list and if a seat or two opens up.
We're talking to Chris Mannix at SI Chris Mannix, squarely in the, by the way, I just think the rule should be no seat should recline, or if they want to recline them, they should all be reclined from the get-go, right? Like just set a policy in place of having them all one way or all the other way. Because like getting screwed in on the process is awful to begin with. All right,
or just take a row or two out of seats, you cheap prick.
Yeah, well,
like,
that would
to, you
also
know, like come on, like
that would also help quite a bit as well. All right, we got the NBA All. I think there's what, 2 games left before the NBA All Star break. Am I right? Are there 2 games tonight?
Yeah, the one in Boston that I'll be at for the Clippers. Yeah.
All right, so there's 2 games remaining, but basically we are at the All Star break. Giannis has become a massive favorite to be NBA MVP. So I want to start here. Is there any chance, assuming he doesn't get injured, which I think you have to toss out as the caveat, is there any way anybody else is an MVP candidate to legitimately give him a run?
I don't see it. I mean, I'm a voter, and I look at the kind of Shaq, you know, early career type numbers that Giannis is putting up, combined with the fact that the Bucks are still on pace to win, you know, 70-ish games. I mean, those are the two main criteria, right? You know, statistical success and team success. I don't see a close second. I mean, you can argue LeBron and AD, and I don't know if there's anybody else, quite
Luka,
frankly. I mean,
Luka is up there just because he's
at least unique, they faded.
Yeah,
but they faded a little bit team-wise, so it doesn't – I don't think – you know, this could be one of those years, honestly, where it could wind up being unanimous or extremely close to because of the numbers Giannis is putting up.
As good as Giannis has been, and he won the MVP last year, he's been better this year. Right now, the Bucks are minus 150, the most recent that I've seen at Foxbet, to win the Eastern Conference in the NBA. Do you believe anybody will actually give them a run this year? And if so, who?
Yeah, look, I think there are a few teams that could do it. I mean, there's a sentiment out there that, well, and I've heard this from, you know, media types as well as NBA types, you know, have said that, oh, well, there's no way the Bucks even get to six games in the playoffs. I mean, there's going to be a lot of pressure on that Milwaukee team just because of the stakes with Giannis. And if, you know, if they bow out early, the chance that he could pass on signing that contract extension, which would put them in an awful predicament. There's a lot of pressure there. And I look at Eric Bledsoe, and I see a guy that the last two postseasons has really struggled at key moments. I mean, 2 years ago, he got completely outplayed by Terry Rozier in Boston. Last year, the conference finals, he was among everybody in that Bucks roster that struggled against Toronto. There used to be a fallback there. I mean, Malcolm Brogdon was the fallback for Milwaukee. He's not there anymore. So if Bledsoe struggles again, you know, that could be problematic. And I look around the conference, and, I mean, Toronto, what are they riding, like a 15-game winning streak at this point? I mean, it's just incredible the way they've been playing. You know, I think Boston at full strength is going to be problematic because of the offensive firepower that they have. And I don't think it's going to be quite as easy as some people think. I agree with that they're a favorite, an overwhelming favorite, but I think at some point they're going to be tested. And I'm curious to see how guys like Bledsoe and some of the guys that are there respond.
With the contest coming up, I'm gonna bet on these on Lock It In, but I'm curious. We got the 3-point contest, All-Star Game MVP, Rising Stars Game MVP. You're an NBA guy. You sit around and watch more games than 99.999% of the people who are listening to us right now. Who do you like in some of these contests? And I'll give you the favorites. Trae Young, Joe Harris, Davis Bertans, Duncan Robinson, Buddy Hield, Zach LaVine, Devontae Graham are the guys I'm seeing for the 3-point contest. Is there anybody that stands out there, and that's in the order that they're favored, by the way, anybody stands out there that you think this guy's going to kill it in the 3-point contest?
You know, I mean, the easy bet is probably Trae Young, but I like Davis Bertans in that spot. I mean, he, like, when you consider the way that, you know, just it's sort of getting into the weeds, but like the stand-up jump shot, like not moving. Trae Young's great in motion, you know, coming off screen, stuff like that. Davis Bertans, for the last couple of years, has been a guy who stands in a corner or stands on a wing and knocks down three-point shots. He's had such a good three-point shooting year. He'd be a sneaky good bet for me.
Okay, that's 4-1. So I may take that on Lock It In and give you credit for it if it hits. All-Star Game MVP. This is, you know, an interesting one. LeBron and Giannis are the two favorites, followed by Anthony Davis and James Harden. Those are the four most likely, according to Foxbet. Who do you think, and this goes into motivation a lot, right? Like, who really wants to go all out in the All-Star Game and win the All-Star MVP? Who do you think cares a lot about this?
Well, I mean, one, I would say just because of how Giannis drafted his team, you know, where he said, oh, guys, pass me the ball. Like, I think he's going to have a pretty solid game. But you always look for kind of the hometown guy. And, you know, Anthony Davis and Chicago, that's something that I can see. And LeBron, you know, always aware of all this stuff, like may try to find a way to help Anthony Davis get there. He doesn't care about All-Star Game MVP, but Anthony Davis winning it in his hometown.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think that's a variable.
That is a very good one. And then that pays off at plus 550, so a little over 5-1. This Rising Star game, a Rising Star MVP. You got Luka, Trae, Zion. John Morant. Does Zion seem like a good bet there as a guy to get a lot more attention since obviously he's not in the All-Star game? Or do you think this is one where they'll only play some of these guys like 10 or 12 minutes? What, if anything, do you like here?
Yeah, I think, and I don't know who's coaching the, it's what, the assistant coaches from New,
yes.
Yeah, there. So I don't think they're going to mess around with Zion. I really don't. I mean, Alvin Gentry is one of the most popular coaches in the league, and I don't think they're going to mess around too long. I like the, you know, he says in the All-Star game as well, but I like the Luka versus Trae Young kind of thing. You know, both these guys have been kind of are intertwined for the rest of their careers because they were traded for each other. I like that becoming a shootout at the end between two guys that can just bomb. And, you know, Luka's so competitive, I think he'll care enough about winning the MVP of that game to pull that one out.
Okay, let's go back to, like, kind of forward thinking to the second half of the season.
Let me say quickly on the dunk contest there.
Yeah, I don't see any odds on the dunk contest, by the way.
Oh, too bad. So, I would have bet on Pat Connaughton with Milwaukee, because you mentioned guys that want it. Like, Pat Connaughton's been having the social media campaign for, like, 3 months. It's like hashtag let Pat dunk, and I know him pretty well. He's going to have some stuff up his sleeve, and not a traditional pick for your dunk contest winner.
I don't know why. Maybe the answer is because that's entirely judged by a committee, but maybe that's why they don't have odds up for that, because in theory, they get nervous when it's just like, you know, somebody could rig it, right? Like, if you are betting and you're a judge, maybe that's why that's not up and everything else is. But I'm kind of intrigued by that, because I'm looking right now and they don't have the dunk contest up on FoxBet. All right, let's go. That's a good one, though, for people out there who may be trying to fill out some different gambling picks. Let's go into the second half of the season. The Rockets are rolling the dice with a style of play that we have never seen before in the modern era, and I don't think that's an exaggeration. They are effectively saying, we are going to play small ball, we're going to put up more threes than you are, and it's a big risk. Does it have a big reward, or do you think ultimately it's going to come up with a disaster here?
Well, I mean, I think both those things can be true, that it has a potential bigger reward than the team they had constructed. I mean, I think it was pretty clear, you know, watching the Rockets with Clint Capela, that they were a really good team, a team that could win a first-round series, but one that had a ceiling. This team could easily get beat in the first round, but because of how dynamic they are offensively, they could catch everybody off guard and make, you know, one of those storybook type runs. There are two things to watch for the Rockets in the second half of the season. One, how do they defend with this group? I mean, the last couple of games, I watched the Utah game and the Boston game. I've been shocked at how well they've defended. They've become, you know, obviously really switchable. Everybody can guard everybody out there on the floor. It's going to be able to guard anybody. And, you know, that's been effective with PJ Tucker and Robert Covington in the front court. The other is, how disciplined can Russell Westbrook be? Because what the Jazz did to him, you know, a few nights ago, putting Rudy Gobert on him, that's something you're going to see bigger teams try to duplicate. And what they'll do is they'll plant that center, whether it's Gobert or Dwight Howard or Nikola Jokic, right in the middle of the floor, and point to Russell Westbrook and say, you go ahead, you shoot threes, you shoot long twos. If you make them, we'll tip our cats to them. He did that against Utah, you know, to extreme effect. Can he keep doing that the rest of the season? He has been incredibly disciplined at not shooting threes the last couple of months. He's taken that out of his game altogether. He made easy mid-range jump shots against the Jazz. Will he be tempted to just start bombing away, seeing all that space? Will he continue to go to the basket and look for easy opportunities?
So that is the question about the Rockets. The other most interesting thing, I think, is before we get to your most biggest surprise and biggest disappointment in the first half, do you like the Wiggins trade, and what are the Warriors trying to set up here by trading for Wiggins and moving away D'Angelo Russell like they did?
You know, I think they'd like Andrew Wiggins to become their modern version of Harrison Barnes with that group. They're looking ahead to next year and seeing, you know, Steph and Clay back, Draymond back again. And, you know, they were a 70-plus win team with Harrison Barnes in that group. And, you know, Wiggins, you're asking a lot for him to become that type of three-point shooter, but, you know, he started to evolve his game as a three-point shooter, so I guess I can see that. And I, like everybody else, I think he'll be a little bit better as a third or fourth option and not have that number one pick pressure on him as he had in Minnesota. I just, my biggest issue was I thought you could have waited and had the same deal over the summer. I mean, I would have been curious to see what D'Angelo Russell and maybe the number one overall pick could get you in a trade. I mean, how do things shake out in the playoffs? Does Philly phase out and all of a sudden Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid become available? What happens in Washington if they get to the offseason and Bradley Beal says, you know what, I don't want to be here anymore? I just think that the potential return for D'Angelo Russell plus the number one pick is higher than Andrew Wiggins plus the number one pick. So, look, Minnesota's thirst for Russell is real. Like, they would have chased him to the ends of the earth. So I think they would have been there for Russell in the summertime. I just would have liked to have seen some more patience on the part of the Warriors and wait till the offseason.
What do you think the Warriors' game plan is with those two first-round picks, I think, that they're going to have now, right? Like, are they planning on pairing that together to get one more player? It seems like, based on the Wiggins trade, that they think they can be back in the championship race. So I'm assuming they're going to try maybe not to use those picks themselves, but to try to get another player. Who would be that player?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know who that guy is because I don't know the value of these first-round picks this year. I mean, there's a very widespread and growing perception that this year's draft stinks.
Yeah.
And you know that because picks are flying around at the trade deadline, both in actual deals and in offers. I mean, Boston was throwing around, you know, draft pick offers to Washington for Bertans at the trade deadline. They're sitting on three first-round picks in this upcoming draft, and I don't know if they want even one of them. So I don't know, you know, if they can find some kind of front court help, some kind of big man that can play the Andrew Bogut type of role, I would imagine that's a priority for them. Eric Pascal has been good for them this year, but maybe a veteran that fits that mold. But I just don't know what those picks are going to get you. There just isn't a lot of desire to stockpile first-round picks in this June's draft.
All right, last question for you, and we're talking to Chris Mannix at SI Chris Mannix. Who is the biggest surprise and who is the biggest disappointment in your mind in the first half of the NBA season?
Well, I mean, on a minor level, you know, you look at Oklahoma City trading away two All-Stars and still sitting there in sixth place in the Western Conference. That's a big surprise to me. I mean, Toronto losing Kawhi Leonard. I think right now they have a better record than what they had last year is nothing short of remarkable. I mean, the steps taken forward by some of those young guys in the player development program. I mean, Pascal Siakam has been injured a little bit. Otherwise, he would be in my top five MVP debates. Those are the positive surprises. On the negative side, I know Portland's had some injuries, and you know Zach Collins going out very early hurt them. But I just don't know why they broke up a team that went to the conference finals. I mean, they moved off Al-Farouq Aminu. They moved off Evan Turner. I mean, they had a team that played well together, that had chemistry together, and went as far as any Portland team has done in a while. And the response to that is to move off these pieces and, you know, aim to play young guys like Anthony Simons and Collins and other guys at different positions. So that, to me, was a disappointment. You're watching, Clay, Damian Lillard have one of those unbelievable years, like one of those kind of Kobe years when the Lakers stunk. And it's kind of wasted because there's a pretty good chance that team doesn't make the playoffs and a year of Damian Lillard's prime just goes right on by.
Good stuff as always, my man. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the All-Star game and hopefully some of these suggestions hits on the All-Star bets.
Definitely. You got it, Clay.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We've had an interesting first 2 hours. Encourage you to go download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss any of the program. We have been debating what exactly is going to happen with Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers in the wake of owner David Tepper's, at best, tepid endorsement of Cam Newton. He said this when he was asked about whether Cam was going to be the future for the Carolina Panthers.
Listen, I'm not a doctor. You know, I said it a million times. Is he healthy? And how does, I mean, he's not a doctor. So, you know, there's a lot of different things can happen. But first is he healthy? Tell me that and then we can talk.
He didn't have surgery to repair his busted up shoulder. He didn't blow up his knee and have an MCL, an ACL, and a broken leg all rolled in together. He had a Lisfranc injury in his foot. And so I understand that he missed 14 games because of it. But in the grand scheme of things, this is a relatively minor surgery. We'll talk about this with Dr. David Chow in the next segment. To me, based on that answer, the Carolina Panthers are ready to move on from Cam Newton. Where would they move on? In what direction? Well, I think you can make an argument, and I don't even think it's a bad argument at all, that the Carolina Panthers could be interested in maybe taking a quarterback in this year's draft at number 7 overall pick. And the question that I floated, which has provoked an absolute tsunami of response so far, is what if the Carolina Panthers, with Christian McCaffrey entering the fourth year of his contract, going to expect to make $15 million plus per year, what if they offered Christian McCaffrey and the number 7 overall pick to the Cincinnati Bengals in exchange for the number 1 pick? Would you take that trade if you were the Cincinnati Bengals? And the reason why I say that is the Panthers have Joe Burrow, Joe Burrow's passing game coordinator now, Joe Brady, on their coaching staff. And so if you are convinced that this is a guy that could make the sense for you in the years ahead, could Carolina make an aggressive move to get up and get Joe Burrow? 14,000 of you, over 14,000 of you have voted in the first 45 minutes. And 49% of you have said, yes, you would make that trade if you were the Bengals. 51% of you have said no. You can go read all the angst. There are hundreds of comments underneath that question. You can go check it out and see what you think in terms of whether it makes sense or not. You can go vote. So that is what we started the debate with. We've debated it on the show. But I also wanted to jump into the latest social media debate, which is the reclining seat issue on airplanes. We do a lot of great debates on the show, but I am firmly of the opinion that you should not be able to recline seats on an airplane. I am 6 foot tall. For anybody who is taller than me, I feel for you completely. When there is somebody who is little, like small people who recline seats drive you insane if you're somewhat tall at all. Your feet aren't even touching the ground and you decide you need to recline your seat. There is a video that has gone viral of a guy who's like 6 foot seven sitting in his seat on the back row. He can't move at all. And there's a small woman who has decided to recline the seat directly into his knees in front of her. And so I am 100% of the belief that one of the great flaws of airplane design of all time was allowing seats to recline in any way. And I believe that if you are the kind of person who gets on an airplane and reclines your seat, I'm going to be honest, I think you're an awful human being.
What about the guy that you just talked about? He's punching the back of her seat nonstop.
I wouldn't endorse that behavior. But we talked with Chris Mannix. He said he's 6 foot three. The knee squarely in the back of the recliner is a move that I 100% wholeheartedly support, because your knee really can't move at all. So I think just directing that knee so it's right in the small of the back of the person who decides to recline the seat, I think is a totally valid move on your part. So I think seats should never recline. So what are, well, I'll start with you, Dub, because you're 6'2". I think this has to do almost entirely with height. The taller of a guy you are, or the taller of a woman you are, the more you disagree with the idea that you should be able to recline your seat at all. So I'm going to bet, Dub, that you are also, like me, 100% opposed to seat reclining.
I mean, I can't stand it. And to me, this is on the same level, like reclining your seat on an airplane is on the same level of annoyance and ridiculousness as bringing a baby into a movie theater. Okay, I don't go to the movie theater often, and this is one of the reasons why. Well, I think I've been to 3 movies in the past year and a half, 2 years, and I went to go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood when it came out.
Yep.
And about 3 rows in front of me in the theater, some lady brought in her baby, and the baby was crying, as babies typically do, pretty much the entire show. And it was one of the more infuriating things
right.
of all time. I mean, who... You don't bring a baby into a movie theater, because what's it going to do? It's in a dark room with a bunch of strangers with a big screen. He doesn't know what's going on. So it just starts crying the whole time. And reclining the seat on the airplane, to me, is on the same level. I'm not even sure why they even have the recline feature, because it only reclines about 8 inches, it seems. So it's not even that big of a difference. So why even have it in the first place? I mean, to me, it's totally ridiculous. And for the person in the video, the woman, to do that the second to last row, when everyone knows the last row of an airplane, those seats don't recline. So there's no, hey, I'll recline, you recline deal. There's none of that going on to begin with. So I think it's just totally out of line, especially when you're in the second to last row.
Yeah, I just find it to be utterly – and like I think that planes should be designed not to have reclining seat capability at all. What about you, Danny G? Which side of the equation do you come down here?
Well, I'm a pit bull, not a giraffe, but I still agree with you guys. I think it's rude. I love the debate back and forth on social media. I've been reading a ton of the comments. People are super hyped up about this. This lady wrote, "I honestly take a look before reclining. If someone is asleep or holding a baby, I don't do it. If it's a short flight, I don't do it. Long flight, I am reclining." And a lot of people are on her side saying, yeah, if it's a long flight, I want to recline and sleep. So it seems like that's part of the debate.
First of all, I don't know that the reclining seat makes that much of a difference in your sleep ability.
For like, some people, I guess it does, but you're right. For me, it doesn't. I mean, I guess people are split on that, but I think the last row of the plane is the problem because obviously your back is to that little wall. What I think they should do is build the second to last row to not be able to fully recline. That would fix this problem because mostly this comes up at the very back of the plane.
I think they should just not allow plane. I think it's the – I bet if we had flight attendants, if we opened it up and we said only flight attendants can call – I bet the number one issue that they have is reclining seats. I bet almost all flight attendants would say seats shouldn't recline because it creates – I mean, because when you sit down in a coach class seat and you feel like you're already incredibly constrained, the worst thing that can happen is somebody immediately reclines in front of you. And it seems to me that this is also a function of how tall you are. I don't see I think that the taller you are, the more cognizant you are of how little space you have if you recline. And so my argument would be, I bet taller people are far less likely to recline than short people. I don't think short people understand how little space a tall person actually has on a plane. And so for somebody who's like 5'2" to suddenly decide, I mean, their feet aren't even literally touching the ground. Like when they recline, their feet are still up in the air. They've got plenty of space. Like you are, it's like you're imprisoned all of a sudden. And I think about it from the perspective of, a lot of times I try to work on airplanes. And so if I have if I have my tray table down, and I got my laptop out, if somebody reclines their seat, first of all, you could almost break my laptop, right? Because it can catch the top of your laptop the way it's set up or your iPad. But secondly, like it's impossible to type if somebody reclines in front of you. It's literally impossible to work on your laptop. What about you, Eddie? What perspective you come down on this?
I couldn't agree more with you about the laptop situation. I like to use my laptop on an airplane as well. You talked about it being maybe a tall or short issue. I think it's more for a lot of people if you are a recliner or you're not. I'm not, and part of the reason why I don't do it is because I hate when people in front of me
do
it.
Yeah, right. That's why I don't do it.
Yeah, so I am totally in favor of...
And by the way, some people say, well, if somebody reclines in front of you, you recline too. Then it basically takes you being an ass and passes it all the way back through, right?
Yes.
Like, so it takes a poor behavior that you decided, and it exacerbates it by making it worse all the way back through.
So I am obviously on the side of not reclining, and if the plane didn't offer that, I would be totally fine with it.
What about, is Roberto still alive, or has he died?
Yeah, I'm still here.
He literally sounds like that. What's your position?
Recline all the way, man. Who cares? It's a free country, right? No, just kidding. No, no recline, man. That's disrespectful, in my eyes, at least.
All right, we're going to open up phone lines. We'll take some calls here, 877-996-6369. I'm actually curious what the OutKick crew has to say here. Well, let's start rolling through.
We got Kevin in North Carolina.
Kevin, what's your perspective here?
All right, so I haven't flown since 87, but I'm actually...
How is that possible? You haven't been in an airplane since 1987?
I live by the code. It's more about the journey than the destination. We travel once a year. Last year was Nashville. And, you know, some are easier than others. But we typically drive so that we can, you know, like sightsee a little bit. But this year we decided to fly. So I have an approach that works. Like when I'm in a social setting or like public transportation and somebody tries to strike up a conversation with me, I will respond no matter what they say with this phrase. My passion is semi-pro badminton. Now, that really throws them off, and typically they won't say another word to me. So I got 6 months to plan something similar if somebody leans back on me. I will try to do something that makes them so uncomfortable they lean up.
That is an amazing line.
Let me give you 5 seconds on my feelings on the McCaffrey thing, if I can.
Yeah.
All right. So, 49%, the half of those are probably people who agree that the sign stealing didn't help the Astros, and the other half are probably from Charlotte. Thank you.
I don't even know. Kevin has just blown my mind there with his entire call.
His first comments, it reminds me of Larry David putting the MAGA hat on.
Yeah.
So that he, you know, doesn't have to deal with
people. It is funny to not drive. I'll be honest with you. When I go through security at airports and people say, why haven't you done TSA pre-check and all that stuff? Well, a lot of times I'm traveling with my kids. And I don't think you can. Kids get in TSA pre-check. I can't even keep up with all that stuff. But in Nashville, the lines are not that bad. But when I'm in other airports, the amount of I swear to God, the amount of people who don't know, I mean, it's been, I understand, like, for the first couple of years after 9/11, things changed a lot, but it's now been 20 years since 9/11. If you don't know that you have to, like, take your laptop out or you have to take your shoes off, where have you been? Like, how is it possible that you have missed the last generation of air travel evolution? And I swear to God, it seems like I get behind the person who doesn't know how to go through airport security every time I go through an airport. And again, when it's 2003, oh, I can't have a water bottle. Oh, man, that's crazy. It's only been a couple of years since 9/11. I don't think the rules have really changed that much in the last decade. I think pretty much since that guy tried to blow up his shoes, everybody's had to take their shoes off. And since, you know, they figured out that somehow laptops were dangerous, everybody's had to take their laptops out. How do people not know this? It really is infuriating to me. So the travel experience in general is putting people on edge to begin with, but the reclining seats is off the top rope, I think, most frustrating thing that happens on an airplane. Who's up next, Dub?
All right, we got Ben in West Palm Beach.
Ben, what do you think?
Hey, I think you've kind of hit on it, but I think the person that does recline does it strictly in spite of the person behind them.
Yeah.
Because you really only get, I mean, it reclines like, what, 2 inches? Which, to the person behind you, you have 0 inches, so that's everything.
Yeah.
But I've reclined my seat before just to see. It doesn't even affect you. If anything, it kind of makes me more uncomfortable. So it's a weird angle, and it barely reclines.
Yeah. I would understand. Thanks for that. I would understand more if you're, like, in the lay flat beds, you know, like on really high end first class. If you're traveling cross country on a red eye or you're going overseas, they now have lie flat first class, right? Or super high end business class. If you're going to Asia or something like that, that is, oh, I totally get it. Like I see the difference. I'm not a great airplane sleeper, but if I were able to completely recline and lay back all the way, I think it would make a tremendous difference. I don't buy that the reclining nature of the average coach class seat actually makes that much difference in your ability to sleep. I think you're either going to be able to sleep or not sleep, almost zero impact from the recline because it doesn't go back far enough to actually impact things. If anything, I'm with the caller. It kind of makes it a little bit more awkward because you're like kind of going backwards a little bit, but not quite, and it puts your feet in an odd angle and everything else. Like, so I don't really buy that it makes it easier to sleep in the first place, which is the only reason why you'd be willing to do it. Dub, who's next?
We got Morgan in Florida.
Morgan, what do you think?
Hey, Clay, quick thing. One of my problems was I used to be 400 pounds. You try to have someone recline on you, squeezing my
back. Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about the fat guy in the seat. That's got to be even.
In the middle, I got the middle seat, and yeah. I feel embarrassed. Here I'm 400 pounds, 5'11", and I'm squeezing my ass cheeks into the two people next to me.
Yeah.
Because that stupid recliner.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's a good point. I'm thinking only of the tall guy perspective. Fat guy perspective has got to be, I mean, the fat guy has to really want to reach his big meat hook of an arm up around and just choke the person out in front of him. There's got to be no doubt about that. Because you're already like, oh, I got to squeeze into this tiny seat to begin with. And then, and God forbid, if you're a tall and a fat guy, then you're just like even worse in a worse position. Dub, anybody else?
Yeah, we got a few more. Carl in Las Vegas.
All right, Carl, what you got?
Hey, Clay, miss anonymous mailbag. But anyway,
yeah, we got to do that more when out football season's over. Thanks for reminding me.
No problem. I'm 6'3". I hate it. It reminds me of the guy that, because out here in Vegas, we got reclining movie theater chairs.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that guy that reclines in the movie theaters, or the guy that puts his feet up on the back of you in the movie theater.
That's frustrating.
Very annoying.
Yeah, thanks for that. That is really annoying when somebody puts their feet up on your chair in the movie theater.
Yeah, I dated a girl who did that anytime I brought her to the movies, and it really bothered me.
Was there people in front of her?
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's,
and,
I mean,
Jesus. And I, like, kind of nudged her, like, hey, the people in front of you, and she didn't care.
Yeah, she's obviously a savage. Who's up next?
At Sherman in Florida.
Sherman, what's up?
Hey, yeah, I've actually never flew before, so I got a different perspective against it. I say, what if you have, I'm against it. I'm totally against it.
Yeah.
But what if you have paid different prices for different seats if they're going to recline?
Yeah, so and that's an interesting angle. I understand, for instance, I fly Southwest a lot because I live in Nashville. And like, I could fly first class sometimes, but I like Southwest schedule, for instance, when I go to L.A. So I will be a man of the people, and I fly the Greyhound of the skies, Southwest Airlines, right? Southwest has an early boarding process where, you know, like you're if you're not familiar with Southwest, you get like there's no assigned seats. So you're in the A, the B, or the C boarding group. And I will be oftentimes in the A boarding group, and they have exit row seats. And so in the exit row, there's a little bit more room. That's like first class on Southwest. And so that's where I want to go, right in the middle part of the plane. I want to grab the aisle exit row Southwest seat because I think of all the seats on Southwest, that's the best one. And I don't really care if it's like an hour and a half flight, but if I'm flying all the way to LA and I'm going to be on a plane for 4+ hours, it makes a big difference in terms of me being able to potentially work, let's say. So that factors in as well. But a lot of times the exit row seats don't recline. And so it doesn't matter to me where I am sitting. I don't recline my seat, with one caveat. I will recline my seat if I'm in first class because you have so much space. I feel like it's designed to allow you to recline your seat and you don't end up in someone else's area. And everyone in first class has the ability to recline their seat. And you actually recline, it seems to me, to a level where the recline actually makes an impact, but you're also not immediately hitting the knees of the person.
Yeah, those recline to where you're not at a strange angle.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, I do think that's worth pointing out. What about Dub? Who else?
Mike in New York.
Mike, what do you think?
Hey, I'm just calling. I think this is a deeper meaning. It doesn't have to do with reclining. I think it has to do with being tall versus being short. You know, you guys who are already tall, you won the genetic lottery. What are you complaining about? You should let us short people finally for once get some type of advantage in life.
How tall are you, Mike?
I'm 5'8".
Yeah. Well, first of all, you're not that short if you're 5'8". Thanks for the call. But this is a great example of the Napoleon complex. Short man is so disadvantaged, he feels like, that he has to put it on the tall guy for a 2.5-hour flight in the domestic airlines. Just because you're so angry at the world because you're short, you got to recline your seat and punish the tall guy because he stole your girlfriend, because he might have stole your wife. I mean, let's be honest. That's not the way for a short man to get revenge. The way for a short man to get revenge is to get super rich, like Jeff Bezos. And then you get the girl no matter what. Short guy can't be angry at tall guy. Get your revenge by dominating the world. Mike Bloomberg, little man, might end up nominated for president. I think Pete Buttigieg, whose name I can't get right no matter how many times I try to get it, little guy, might end up getting nominated for president. Get your revenge by succeeding over the tall guy, not by destroying him on an airline flight. Who's up next?
All right, last one here. We got Ryan in Portland.
Ryan, what do you think?
Oh, I was going to say about the people that don't know what they're doing in the airport. In their defense, the last time I was on a plane before October was 1995. So we
How old
had
are
research,
you?
So we weren't. I'm 35.
So 1995, you were how old? I mean, I can't even do the math on that. Like 14 years old?
I was 10.
10. So how did you manage to go the last 25 years of your life without getting on an airplane?
You know, I don't really know. We're here in Oregon where we have desert, mountains, ocean, and beach within an hour either direction. So didn't really have to go anywhere.
No, thanks for the call. if you've gone 25 years without getting on an airplane, I don't understand. I'm going to be honest with you. I really don't understand how that's possible. I understand if you're like, if you're listening right now and you're like 75 and you just turned 100, I'm like, okay, you know, you got to 75 years old and you're like, I've seen everything. I don't want to get on an airplane anymore. But 25 years without being on an airplane, I mean, I think that's pretty hard to for me to quantify. To never, like, from the age of 10 to 35, it's wild.
Some people are afraid to fly, that's why.
Yeah, well, that's one thing. If you have a huge phobia, but he said, oh, I've got everything in Oregon I need. I've just never thought about getting on an airplane.
But even so, when you're in the security line, you could watch what everyone else in front of you is doing.
Yeah, they have. I think one of the worst jobs in America is the guy who works at TSA and has to say over and over again,
yeah,
take your shoes off, take your laptops out. You can't bring water through. You ever watch that guy? I mean, I don't know what suicide rates are in America, but I bet TSA guy who has to say the same thing. I mean, I don't know how many times that
separate
guy says
trays,
that.
Separate trays. Yeah, do not put your bag in a tray. Ma'am, take it out of there. Yeah, over and over.
I'm not sure there's a worse job in America than that job. I mean, I'm serious. Can you think of a worse job to do every day than, I'm not saying the TSA security guy who gets, maybe they rotate them, I don't know. But the TSA security guy who gets to look at the stuff going through the conveyor belt, not a great job. The pat down, not a great job, right? I'm not saying these are amazing jobs. But that's like, that's dunking and hanging on the rim on the TSA security guard who has to be like, even sitting there and looking at the IDs and matching them, like that's a billion times better than being the person who's just standing there giving the rules to go through security. Do they rotate jobs? Do you know? Anybody know?
Not sure. That's a really good question.
Or is that like, do you get promoted? Is that like the difference between being in charge of the fries and being in charge of the hamburgers? Like, do you start off in the TSA crew where you have to be the person saying that over and over again? Because I would think that's the lowest level TSA job. The highest level would be sitting there with the screening capability, looking through the, you know, the whatever that radar thing they have there, the electromagnetic, I don't know what it's, x-ray machine, whatever that is. Like, the least important job at the TSA by far is the guy or girl who has to say all the rules. I don't know the answer, but I do know that I am fundamentally opposed to anybody reclining their seats. All right, when we come back, Dr. Chow will be with us.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We bring in Dr. David Chow at Pro Football Doc with us on Twitter. And before we get going, I'm sure you've traveled a lot over the years, Dr. Chow. What's your position on airplane seat reclining?
Do unto others.
So are you a recliner?
Depends on the circumstance. I'm not always a recliner. You know, I mean, look, if it's a big guy behind me, then I probably don't. But if it's like a kid or someone else, I might look back and do it.
By the way, we just posted a poll question. I said I'm 100% opposed to seats reclining on airplane flights. Should airplane seats be designed to recline? 69% of you right now with 1,000 votes immediately in say no. Because I think this is probably the number one fight that happens on airplanes is over seat reclines. Speaking of fights that are going on, I don't know if you, I'm sure you saw David Tepper's comments about Cam Newton's health. And we talked a lot about it over the course of the show today, but you can speak to this infinitely better than us, but the surgery that Cam Newton had is not a serious surgery in the sense of what I'm sure you've seen a lot of surgeries happen over the years. Did you think that it sounded a bit strange that Tepper, the owner of the Panthers, was almost inclined to say, hey, we got to see whether Cam Newton's going to be healthy? To me, that means he's not really committed to him.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of caught my attention when I saw that, and you know, especially the way that he said it. Look, I don't know David Tepper, but he certainly is a hands-on owner.
Right.
He flew to Baylor to the home of Matt Rhule to recruit him and interview him. I get it. The fact is, he's not a doctor. But you don't think he's talked to his doctors or knows exactly what's going on? I mean, that just seemed like, yeah, they're moving on. I mean, if you're reading the tea leaves, but, you know, we'll see.
But, I mean, the point here is, too, the surgery that Cam Newton's had, it's not like his shoulder was being completely redone and you question whether he's ever going to be able to throw normally again. The Lisfranc surgery that he had is relatively minor in the context of NFL offseason surgeries, right?
Well, it depends on, you know, the extent of it. However, it is a little strange that it happened so late, right, in terms of what happened. Usually, you try and address things early. Like Hollywood Brown had a fairly significant Lisfranc injury and yet still had a successful season at wide receiver this year for the Ravens. So, and what it also tells me is maybe they don't have a lot of confidence in Cam in the pocket.
Yeah.
You know, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, it wasn't his guy. He's a new owner, so he's entitled. But the way he said it definitely raised my eyebrows.
We're talking to Dr. David Chow at Pro Football Doc on Twitter. You can find him there. Phillip Rivers, you worked with a lot when you were one of the team doctors or the team doctor of the San Diego Chargers back in the day. Phillip Rivers now no longer a member of the Chargers. What can you tell us about your relationship with Phillip Rivers, about him as a player to work with, and what you would say about his future going forward?
Well, you know, none better in terms of a guy, okay? Just a small example of what kind of person he is. I know he gets grief for trash talk, but it's gosh oh golly trash talk.
Yeah, right.
And it's actually very entertaining. He's just hyper excitable is what it is. It's like he's got to do something, and so he talks. But, you know, he's just, if you look at his comments as on the way out, he talked about the people, and that's genuine from him. A small anecdote. So he obviously had the played with the ACL tear and 6 days after a knee scope in that 2008 AFC Championship game. And he said to me, you know, he wanted to play. He wanted to do this. I was like, well, you know, you're 24 years old. The best thing is to not. Let's be safe. You got a long career. And he said, look, I don't know when I'll get back for a chance to play to the Super Bowl. I want to seize the opportunity. And, you know, obviously that was his only game. But the other anecdote from that is literally 10 years to the day from his ACL surgery. And I had no idea it was 10 years to the day. He texted me out of the blue and said, thank you for everything, and that it was 10 years to the day. So those are the little things that make everybody love the guy. And I think he's going to go on to continue to do great things. He just needs an offensive line, right? I mean, played through a ton of injuries as well. So a lot, most of them that I can't even talk about. We know about the ACL one, but there are a lot more injuries that he's played through his 220 some game streak. So he's as tough as they come as well.
Talk to me about the ACL injury again, because I think that's a story that kind of slides under the radar a bit. He tore his ACL and then went on to play in the AFC Championship game against the Colts, if I remember correctly. And you pointed out he was only 24 years old at the time. But what kind of toughness does that take?
Well, extreme toughness. He tore it against the Colts in the final game at the RCA Dome. And if you remember back then, as I was walking off the field with him, he got a lot of grief because he was speaking very forcefully and gesticulating and pointing at fans at the time. And the national media said, you know, he was a bad guy for doing so. I can tell you what the fans are saying, which was, F this, you know, you're done, this, that, the other. And okay, maybe you should have ignored it. But all he did was turn and point to them very forcefully and say, don't you worry, I'll be back. Don't you worry, I'll be back.
Yeah.
And he fought to return to that game. Didn't Billy Volek led us to the win. All the way on the plane flight home, he was talking about he's got to find a way to play, got to find a way to play. And he did play in that AFC Championship game against the then undefeated New England team. And remember, that was the LT game where LT got some grief. Gates had a toe injury, et cetera. We were pretty banged up, yet Phillip was the leader. And we actually kept that all quiet the whole time. It was after the game in the locker room that players were saying, you got to go talk to that guy and how tough he is and what he did, that the story broke.
Yeah, that's wild. I mean, to play, and then he came back and didn't miss a game, right? Wasn't he back the first week?
Yeah, you know, I had a chance to visit with Adrian Peterson a little bit this year in Miami and talked about his nine-month ACL recovery, and it is fantastic, and that's spoken of as the bellwether. But what went unnoticed, and I get it, running back versus quarterback, but Phillip Rivers at 100 days, and it's documented very well, was returned to minicamp in 100 days, played, you know, showed up for training camp, didn't miss anything. And at the time, that was a career high, about 105 quarterback rating for that season coming off his ACL.
Yeah, that's wild in and of itself. All right, we have got the XFL going on, and there's actually a lot of gambling interest and television interest in this league. I would say the biggest injury news, and I didn't think we'd have a lot of XFL injury news, but Landry Jones, the starting quarterback for the Dallas team, missed week one, seems to have a fairly significant knee injury that he got. What's his likelihood for week two? And what I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know a lot of player names. What other significant injuries to you are out there, or what other teams have significant issues?
Yeah, you know, I do some hits with FanDuel, More Ways to Win, and they asked us, you know, can you cover XFL? And I actually ran into Oliver Luxum, you know, in Small World and down in Miami, and as we were taped a segment early that week, and I heard, got lucky, and because there's not a lot of injury information. It's a new league. We don't even know the exact reporting process and how it works. And practice injuries are always a little bit of a mystery, even in the NFL, because there's no film. But it seemed to me he had a lead leg MCL sprain, which I said that he would be able to play last week. And indeed, he was listed as the third quarterback last week, but coaching decision didn't play, even though he was the top pick in the draft for them. Because you got to remember, this is a new league with all new coaches, with all new players, with all new schemes, without an OTA summer, springtime, you know, multi-month study period. This was show up to training camp and let's go. And so if your quarterback hasn't practiced throughout your abbreviated training camp without an off-season program, how does he know all the plays or all his teammates? So that was the issue for where he couldn't play in week one. But now that he's been practicing a little bit, I do expect him to play this week going forward.
Any other major news that we need to be aware of?
Well, you know, we focus on quarterbacks, right, because we don't know a lot of other names. But Aaron Murray with his foot injury probably is not going to play, and is back up with a separated shoulder. So there's a depth issue there at quarterback for that team. But also you have to remember, they have a very unique system now of replacement players. There's sort of one team that's sort of in waiting that all the other eight teams can draft from or pick from in case they need anyone. They're in theory working out and ready to go. So that's kind of a unique concept for the XFL.
Outstanding stuff as always, Dr. Chow. Appreciate the time, my man.
Thank you.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.